Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Pretty awesome, man. Today is our 10th anniversary. We are 10 years old, which means we're in fifth grade. Puberty is coming. I don't know what it means, but it's pretty cool. It's pretty exciting. And today is going to be different. We are going to remember today why we exist. We're going to look back at some of what God has done and think a little about the future. And then tonight we are having a birthday party. We're going to have a professional comedian and cake join us at 6 o'clock. Next week we will be back to normal. And so next week we're starting a brand new teaching series on doubt. We're going to talk about, like, why do we have doubts, and can doubts actually be a good thing? Can they grow our faith? And it's going to be a great series. Come back next week. Bring your friends. But today is our 10th anniversary, and I want to show you two things Jesus said that help us to understand why we exist, okay? But with the first thing, where Jesus said it might be just as important as what Jesus said. So Jesus took his disciples. These are the guys who he is training up into being leaders in his movement to a new way of life. And he takes them to a place called Caesarea Philippi. It was a 25-mile hike. So it probably took them about 12 hours each way. And what's interesting is that they make this trip to Caesarea Philippi, but it was a place that most people would have avoided. It was a place that was considered very sinful, a place of darkness. Back then, people in that city participated in some pretty evil, hedonistic practices. Bestiality, prostitution, sex trafficking, infant sacrifice were all normal for them. It was bad. No rabbi would ever go there with his disciples. But Jesus goes there with his disciples. Okay, that's where. Now let's look at what Jesus said, and we'll put all the Bible verses on the screen. Matthew 16, starting in verse 13. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" Jesus called himself the Son of Man more than he called himself anything else. It was a nickname he had. They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." Then he asked them, "But who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah," which means Savior, "the Son of the living God." Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not overcome it." Jesus says, "I will build my church." He uses this opportunity to talk about building his church. And what's interesting is where he's doing it. He's not doing it from a religious place like the temple, not from the Sea of Galilee area where the disciples were from and would have felt comfortable, not from Jerusalem, which was considered the holy city. No, he takes them to a very sinful place that was dark, and that's where he says, "I will build my church." Now, where they were standing, just near there, was a carved into the mountain in Caesarea Philippi, were different temples dedicated to pagan worship. One of the temples was called the Gates of Hell. Inside of it was a spring of water, and they couldn't get to the bottom of it. It was believed that it was over 800 feet deep, and they called it the Gates of Hell because there was a belief that somehow it was connected to the underworld, that the devil and his demons would move from that world into our world through this spring. And so Jesus is standing there in this dark, sinful place, and he says, "I will build my church." I love that. I love that. The question when we moved here to Las Vegas to start this church, people asked was, "Why Las Vegas? Like, why are you starting a church in Sin City?" Exactly, right? That's why, because that's what Jesus would do. If you study his life, you see that he was always going to the most sinful places and the most sinful people, because it's in a dark, sinful place that the grace of God can shine the brightest. And that's what we get to do together. So they're standing in this dark place, and Jesus asks, "Who do people say I am?" And his disciples offer some of the popular opinions of the day. But then Jesus makes the next question more direct. It says, then he asked them, "But who do you say I am?" It's just like Jesus. Jesus is so compassionate and so caring, but he is also so direct. He's going to bring the question directly to you. Like, I know what everyone else thinks, and I know what your family thinks, I know what your friends think, but I'm asking you, what do you believe? What's your decision? And listen, at some point, that's what Jesus would ask you. It's really interesting. When Jesus first met these disciples, all he asked of them was, come and see. He was like, hey, you don't know me, come hang out. But like, come spend time with me. Come and see who I am. And that's VERF. We are very much a come and see kind of church. So a cool thing about our church is that right about 70% of the people who come, when they first show up, say, I don't believe in Jesus, not a follower, I don't go to church, haven't been in forever. And we are a come and see church. Like, come and see. But like, we know that coming to faith is a journey. We don't want anyone to have a blind faith. We want people to be able to ask the hard questions. If you're new to all this, just come and see. But once you've come and once you've seen, the question becomes, who do you say Jesus is? That's what Jesus asked Peter, the whole group of disciples, and one of them, Peter, the one who always seems to talk first, and he says, Simon Peter answered, right? In the verse it said, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Peter says, you are the Savior who we've been waiting for. You are the Son of God. You are the one that God sent to save us from our sins. And helping people get to that place is a big part of the reason why the church exists and why this church exists. I said that I want to show you two things Jesus said that help us to understand why we exist. Here's the other one. It's in Matthew 28. This is actually the last thing Jesus said before he went back from earth back to heaven. Starting in verse 19. He said, therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. And the disciples said, don't call me Shirley. That's not actually in there, right? But Jesus says to them, he says to us, he says, hey, help people come to a place where they believe in me. And when they do, baptize them and then teach them to obey, to help them to live the life that I have for them. And that's what we are all about. We say that we are church for people who don't like church. Like, we are not trying to get people from other churches who already believe to come here. We want to invite people in who don't believe, who don't go to church, to come and see and meet Jesus and put their faith in him here. And man, it's happened. Anybody walk around and count all the balloons this morning? Probably not, but there are 454 balloons around the building because we have had 454 people come to faith, give their lives to Jesus, and get baptized in the last 10 years, which is pretty awesome. Except that it's no longer true because we had two after last service, so it's 456. Somebody needs to blow up two balloons real fast and throw them somewhere. Pretty cool, right? And we have a couple more people after this service. And most of those people, most of those 454 people did not see this coming, right? Like, it wasn't like, I knew some. It's like they were not believers. They were not churchgoers, but God led them here. You invited them here, and they met Jesus here, and they put their faith in Jesus here. The stories are amazing. We've got, I could tell stories literally all day, but I'm just going to share one, the first one, the first person in our history to, like Peter, realize that Jesus is the Messiah. This is Travis's story.
I was a hustler. I wanted to make a lot of money. You know, if you ask enough people to buy something, eventually somebody's going to buy it. 5 years ago, you know, I was 25, as young, you know, living in New York. I was making, you know, pretty good money, but I felt like I wasn't going to get any farther where I was at. And something had to change, something big. I asked my father one day, you know, where is all the money in America? And he said, Las Vegas. I said, Las Vegas. At that time, I was married with one kid, a boy. I had never been anywhere outside of New York, so it was kind of like a big risk to take, you know, this big move and say, okay, well, I'm going to move my family, my wife and my kid, to this random place where, you know, we have no idea what's going to happen. And just kind of picked up and went. Well, I showed up in Las Vegas with no plan. I didn't know anybody. I'd never been here. I just kind of went. I started, you know, reaching out to nightclubs and doing nightclub photography, making a lot of connections and networking. We started this nightclub photography company. We started taking pictures of tourists. So you'd be in the nightclub and we would take your picture and print it out for you right there. And at the height of it, we had, you know, 10 nightclubs, some like 12 photographers working on staff. Being in the nightclub industry, you party for free, you drink for free, and there's girls from all over the country who come there just to have a good time. Anything goes. I would recruit girls to dance in the strip clubs, and I would manage or take or whatever you want to call it, I would do what I wanted with their money. If a girl was doing really well, $1,000 a night, and I would provide for them, you know. Obviously, if they, you know, needed clothes or food or whatever it was, you know, that was taken care of as well. I was also sexually involved with them, you know, I think it was part of the game is, you know, to make them fall in love with you and want to give you what you want, you know. And it was a mind play, you know. When girls got obviously fed up or tired of it, there was another girl, you know. And most people, I think, you know, they would think like, oh wow, like this guy is living like the life. He's in Las Vegas. He's, you know, partying. He's in big nightclubs and just having the time of his life. But no, it didn't feel that way after a while. My marriage at that time was destroyed. It was just horrible, you know, separated from the kids. The bottom where I could say I really hit rock bottom was, I remember one night, or one morning, I should say, can't tell the difference between morning and night sometimes, is I woke up next to this girl, and I just felt this sickening feeling in my stomach, and I went into the bathroom. I remember looking in the mirror and looking at myself and saying, I'm this old, I'm living here, and this is my life, and this is not the dreams or the goals that I thought I would have as a young, you know, 18-year-old kid in New York. Something had to change, because I knew I was gonna kill myself, or something. I knew that I wanted my family back, though. She started, you know, attending a church, I followed her. I didn't necessarily believe the message they were, you know, speaking, or really don't even understand it. You know, growing up in a household where God was never really spoken about, and if anything, I looked at religion in a negative way. But I just went. One time I heard this guy, Vince, speak, and he just delivered this message about the prodigal son, and it just struck me in my heart. It literally pierced my heart. By the end of the message, I was just bawling and weeping and uncontrollably. It was like, just, you know, not even like me. I was like, well, you know, what's happening right now? that story of the prodigal son is so like Las Vegas. You know, you have this treasure and you go and squander it in this city on wild living, you know, wild partying and stuff. And that's what I did. I squandered my life, which is treasure, you know, and it's still through that, you know, I understood by the end of that message that Vince gave that he was still willing to take me back. I didn't necessarily understand the gospel, quote unquote gospel. I didn't necessarily understand these church terms, right? I just knew that I felt the most indescribable love that I've ever felt.
Here's Travis right here. How's that? Pretty cool. Hey, so what happened next after that part of the story?
Well, me and my wife, we renewed our vows, and we got baptized in a hot tub.
At the Greek Isles. It's the only holy thing that's ever happened in the hot tub at the Greek Isles Casino, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I think it was so powerful that the whole building is knocked down.
Yeah, they imploded the building. They were like, that's it. And so that's where we used to meet before we met here. So so you give your life to Jesus. You start this journey. What happened next? Where does your life go? How do you start growing in your faith?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing that I see that's happened since then is the restoration of my marriage. Mm-hmm. That even after all this pain.
Wife's back there today, my wife, Kim.
Amazing, amazing. And really the grace that God showed me through her, being able to look at me through his eyes and not see the old person that I used to be, but see who I am now. Like I was I was literally a new person.
Yeah.
And it took her a little while to believe that, but she couldn't deny that something had really happened. There was like a grace explosion that happened in my heart. And it's amazing that we have two kids prior and we have two kids after the fact. Mm-hmm. And if this hadn't happened, if God hadn't intervened in this way through Verve, I mean, our two little ones wouldn't even exist. And I think it's just amazing to be able to share that with you guys, yeah. You know?
So cool. Yeah, it's so cool because Travis grew. Like we started meeting every week and which I have done sometimes with people who become Christians and typically I'm trying to like tell them Bible things, but Travis is going, hey, I read this and what does this mean and what do you think about this? And I'm like, dude, this guy is flying. And you know, we give out invite cards and you know, maybe they're all over, you can take one or two. So Travis every week would say, can I have a box? And he would take a box of invite cards, and then the next week he would go, can I have a box? Like another, did you give all those away? I need another box. So we had to like put a line item in our budget, Travis's invite cards. But every week he took a box of invite cards, just started sharing his faith, growing in his faith.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's when you experience this kind of love, you want to tell everybody about it. It's like you experience the cure for your life. Like, how can I not say something?
Yeah,
you know?
I love that. And what are you doing today?
So now I'm a pastor at a local church here in Vegas. And
Travis Travis grew, got trained, got ordained as a pastor almost 3 years ago now, and is working at a church here in town, which is awesome, man. Thank you for being our first story. How cool is that? And thanks for kind of...
Thanks for having me. Appreciate
and for keeping the story. You know, you're kind of a first domino, but you have had an incredible impact with your life. So thanks. Let's hear it for Travis. Thanks, man. I love Travis's story, part because it's our first story and how cool is that, but also I love what he said in the video. He said, I didn't understand all the church terms. I just knew I felt the most indescribable love I had ever felt. And I'm like, that's exactly me. Like when I was 20 years old, I didn't grow up in church. I didn't know anything, but like when it hit me that God loved me despite everything I'd done, it was like everything changes. And I want you to know that love is available to you. Like maybe like me and Travis, you didn't grow up in church and you know nothing about God. That love is available to you. Maybe like the prodigal son in the story that Travis mentioned in the Bible, you were like with God and then you kind of like were like, no thanks God, and you walked away from him. But just like in the story, his arms are open and that love is available to you. I love Travis's story also because he didn't just come to faith. He has grown in his faith, and he has shared his faith. Jesus said in that verse we looked at, he said the church's purpose is to make disciples. He said, go make disciples. A disciple is an apprentice. It's someone who decides, I want to learn a way of life from someone else and actually follow that person into that life. Jesus didn't ask us to just believe. He asked us to follow him into a better life. And so that's what we're about here is making disciples, helping people to find faith in Jesus and then grow in their faith as they follow Jesus, to live the life that he has for them, which is why we do everything we do. Everything. So, like, that's why we come together here on Sunday mornings and Monday nights. That's why we have Next Step every week. And if you've never taken Next Step, it is the best next step for you. That's why we called it Next Step, to make it, like, duh, obvious. And so, like, if you've never taken Next Step, it is a fun hour-long orientation to who God is and the life that God has for you and how do you step into that. And then from that, you'll find out about other next steps you can take. Next Step is offered every Sunday at 11 o'clock. So there's people across the hall. There's the Next Step room taking it right now. You could come next week and be a part of Next Step. It's why we do everything we do. It's why we do Verve groups. It's why we do, we have all kinds of opportunities to serve, and we do mission trips. It's why we give out Bibles and every year create a Bible reading plan. We checked this week. We have given in 10 years out over 2,000 Bibles to people who needed a Bible to read, which is, isn't that cool? And we currently have 269 people subscribed to our Bible reading plan on the Verve Catalyst website, and we have 2,011 subscribed to our reading plan on the YouVersion Bible app. So, like, 2,300 people-ish. I'm not good at math, but I'm pretty sure that's right, who are using our Bible reading plan to read the Bible every day. Like, it's all because we want people to grow and really live the life that God has for them. All right, so let's go back to where Jesus has his disciples. They're at the Caesarea Philippi. Remember, he took his disciples there. Peter answers, you are the Messiah, the Savior. And then Jesus says, I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not overcome it. Now, some people misread this verse. When you hear will not overcome it, some people have this picture that it's like the gates of hell are attacking the church and the church is beaten into a corner, but Jesus is saying, you'll survive, you're going to make it. Maybe that's what you thought, but that is not what Jesus is saying at all. I mean, you think about it, gates are not an offensive weapon, right? You've never seen like a war movie where the general's like, men, we're about to attack. And people are like, should we grab our swords? Should we grab the guns? And he says, no, grab the gates. And they get gates and go rushing in, right? Gates are not an offensive weapon, right? The idea is not that hell is attacking the church with gates. The idea is that the church is attacking hell, and that the gates of hell cannot withstand the onslaught. The picture Jesus is giving us is of the gates of hell surrounding this city of sin and death, and the church is just like on the offensive, hitting and advancing and eventually overwhelming the gates. Jesus called his followers to impact the world through love, always through love. Look what Jesus said in John 13:35. He says, by this everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love. If you study history, you'll discover that the early church was a small group of Jesus followers who had no position and no power, but even still, they absolutely changed the world, turned the world upside down, and their strategy was not to oppose the things going on out there, but instead to start this radical revolution of loving people. Like, the church went out and they loved people that no one else would love. And they loved in radical ways no one else would love. That was what the church was known for, and that's what the church did. And it's incredible when you read about it. In every place, in every situation, Christians became known for love and compassion and generosity. And that's how they drew people to Jesus. That's how Jesus built the church. And that's how Jesus wants to build his church today. That's why at Verve, like, we have tried to build God's church through love. God has called each of us to do that individually. So, just to be clear, God's calling on your life, if you at any point have decided, I'm with Jesus, I want to follow Jesus, God's calling on your life is to build his church through love. And together, as a family, God has called us to do that. And as a church, we've done that, and we have especially tried to focus. You kind of have to focus because there's so much out there, right, that you could change and try to impact. We have especially tried to focus on helping the least, the left out, the left behind, the lost, and lost causes. Because when you believe in a God of compassion and for whom nothing is impossible, well, lost causes become like the only causes worth fighting. And so we have focused a lot of our efforts on big, seemingly impossible challenges and on people who are at risk, and especially on kids who are at risk. That's why locally we've adopted the Marble Manor Housing Project. So Marble Manor is one of the worst housing projects in Las Vegas and even in America when it comes to poverty, crime, drugs, gangs. It is a bunch of single moms almost exclusively, and most of them have 3, 6, 7 kids. You have to make under $10,000 to live in Marble Manor. The average household income is $8,600. And the city gave us 2 apartments that we have knocked the wall down in between and made a youth center. And so we have volunteers there every week who are helping these at-risk kids with their homework and reading to them, or they read to us and we play games with them. And it's awesome. And you have an opportunity to volunteer there. How cool is that? Like, what a great place it would be to make a difference with your life. And it's easy. It's really easy. If you volunteer, you volunteer one night a month. It's like 5:30 to 7. It's not going to overwhelm your life, your schedule. You could do more if you want, but just one night a month. My family's there at least once a month. We love it. It's our favorite night of the month. Man, you could do that. Nationally, we have supported church planting, starting new churches, since the very first week that our church started. So, like, every time that you give here, some of your offering goes to starting new Verve-like churches all over America. We start churches through an organization called Stadia. Isn't that cool to see the kind of the domino effect of our church and our generosity that it goes to start other Verve-like churches around America? One of the things that we're announcing today is that we have decided, in addition to already supporting church planting through Stadia, is we're going to choose one specific church plant a year to invest extra into. And so we'll bring the church planter here, we'll do some coaching, teach some of the things we've learned, have them probably speak here, let you meet the person, and invest financially so that, and we can all be praying for the church. Hopefully in the future we'll be able to do more than one extra a year, but right now we're going to start doing one extra a year. Internationally, we have done some, like, honestly, for me, it's mind-blowing, like, what has happened through our church. So we partner with a ministry in Poland called Pro-Am, and we helped to start a church there in a city called Łódź, and they are doing incredible things, helping their community with some mental health issues. They do a lot for children. We have sent dozens of people there on mission trips. I'm going back there in June. It's awesome. In India, we partner with a ministry called Central India Christian Mission, and they are amazing. Here's just a real short video giving you a bit of a taste of what they do. This is their 2018 video. They haven't made their 2019 yet one.
One, yeah, that one.
2019, it's starting again? In 2019, they started well over 200 churches. They had over 38,000 people give their lives to Christ and get baptized through their churches. So we support them every month, so a little bit of your offering every time goes to them. But we, all on our own, completely just Verve, started two churches in India. And I got some updates this week. Our two churches that we've started have grown and grown and multiplied and are now 21 churches, which is crazy. And the two churches that we've started just in the last couple of years have had 359 people get baptized. In India, we have also started two ministries in two different cities that help women and children get out of sex trafficking. So far, those ministries have rescued 85 women out of sex trafficking and rescued 120 kids out of living in brothels. It's unbelievable. We've done that. And then in Ecuador, I did a fake clap, so I was like, are we clapping again? In Ecuador, we have partnered with Compassion International in conjunction with Stadia. And what we did is we built a building in a poverty-stricken town called Rocafuerte. And then we started a church in that building. And then throughout the week, there's programming where kids from the city come. And those kids who are sponsored by Verve People, those of us who give $38 a month to support a specific kid, they get to come and they get fed every day. They get help with their education. They get medical attention and medical care. And these kids, like, they might not eat otherwise. They would not get medical attention otherwise. And so, like, the statistics and the research on what happens in a kid's life and all the way through their future if they get sponsored are incredible. Here's just a real quick 50-second video of compassion.
Mi papá gana $20 a la semana.
So this week I discovered that there are 13 kids in our church that we started who need sponsors, and it's $38 a month, and you change the kid's entire life. Are there more back there? There's four. So in the first service, like, we're gonna take care of this, right? Like, there's 13 kids who don't get to eat and don't get medical attention and don't get anything because nobody's sponsoring them. And so first service, I said, like, that's not okay. We're gonna sponsor those 13 kids, and it looks like we have four left. And so there's an opportunity for four of you to say, no joke, I am gonna change a kid's life through giving $38 a month. And so we do it. It's so cool. You get to write letters and you get, oh man, it's awesome. And so four of you rush back. There should be like arm wrestling back there over who gets these four kids. Just look at the pictures and you're gonna be like, oh, okay, I'm in. And speaking of at-risk kids, one more big fun announcement. We are starting a new partnership today with Safe Families. So Safe Families is an awesome local organization that helps families in crisis. Most of us, if you have kids like I do, if something happens to you, there's somebody who would take your kids in an emergency, right? You'd say, hey, would you watch my kids for a week? Or grandma would fly into town. Most of us have someone, but there are people who have no one to do that. And so if the parent has to get surgery and be in the hospital for a week, or they have to go to rehab, or they go to jail, their kid has to be thrown into the system, and the result is not good. And so what Safe Family does is they provide a volunteer family from a local church who takes in the child and provides just love for their, like, the kid gets to live with them until they can be reunited with their parents. The impact Safe Family has is incredible. We've been meeting with them, learning all about it, and they prevent child abuse, child neglect, kids being separated from their parents forever. The way we learned about Safe Families is very cool. It's actually through a family in our church. Rob and Rochelle Kohler started volunteering just on their own with Safe Families. They became a Safe Family, which is amazing. I am so proud of them. They're like heroes to me. And so we decided, as we got to see have you guys seen the, you need to see like the kid they have right now. Oh my goodness. And And so, like, we're, like, finding out with Safe Families, and we're like, we got to partner with this group. Like, this is incredible. So they're here today. There's a table in the lobby. I don't know if you saw that. And so here's two opportunities you have. One is they're always looking for more Safe Families because there's more kids who need that temporary foster care, just kind of temporary. It's not a forever thing. And you could do that. Like, maybe you're like, I could do that. Like, we could be a Safe Family. Like, we're in a situation. We could do that. What's cool is if you're like, no, we can't do that. Like, that's not our situation right now. Well, there's still something you can do, because what Safe Families does is they put a team around the Safe Family. So it's not like, good luck, Safe Family, you're on your own. But a team at the church who says, like, hey, we're with you. So, like, if you need babysitting one night because you got stuff going on, we could babysit. Call us. If you need a meal, if you're, like, overwhelmed because, like, call us. We could bring you a pizza or something. Like we're in the team, and so you could be on the team. You could be on Robin Rochelle's team, and hopefully we'll have more Safe Families. We'll need more teams where you say, hey, we want to know you are supported and our church is behind you. So stop by just even for a minute and talk to Martin. Is at the table. He's one of the directors of Safe Families. He's awesome. And find out more about what they do and about the opportunity that you have to be a Safe Family, or maybe to get on a team of a Safe Family. You guys have some really cool opportunities today, right? So you could volunteer at Marble Manor just one night a month, change kids' lives. So cool. You could sponsor a kid in Ecuador for $38 a month. You could become a Safe Family, or you could become a part of a team around a Safe Family. Here's what I've been praying all week. Actually, for over, well over a week. How cool would it be if every single one of us chose today to do one of those things? Like, what if, I'm serious, like, literally every person, what if we all said, I am going to increase the amount of love that I am putting out into the world. I am going to increase the impact that I am having in the world. You know, we started this church so that we could raise up a family of Jesus followers who love God, love people, and turn the world upside down. And you have got some awesome opportunities today to do just that. So why don't you choose one? You could really choose two. Like, none of these things, other than maybe being a Safe Family when you've got the kid, none of these are overwhelming things, right? They're $38. It's sending a check. It's one night a month. You could do that. And remember, invite your friends back next week for our series on doubt. And if you're here today for the first time and you're like, I don't think I'm coming back because this was not about me at all. Like, you guys are just celebrating you. You came on a weird day. I hope it was fun anyway for you. Come back next week. Totally different. We're starting this new series on doubt. Invite your friends to it. It's going to be really good. You know, we say that we want to be a church that turns the world upside down, and for 10 years, God's been doing that, like, one life at a time. God is so good, and I am so grateful, right, that I've gotten to be a part of this, and God's given me a front row seat to see what he can do, and I am so grateful to you. Like, to those of you who have become a part of this family and who have contributed, you've served, and you've given, and you've invited your friends, thank you so much, and this is so much fun. Isn't it? Like, getting to do this together. It's crazy thinking back 10 years. So some of you heard this story, but we started this church with 4 people in my living room. And it wasn't like we were getting together for just dinner. It was like, this is the church. Do you have any idea how lame it is to have a church of 4 people? Like, our whole church could have fit in a Mini Cooper. It's like, this is not inspiring at all. Like, this is kind of sad. And so we created this thing to keep up our spirits during that time, to help us to remember that God was doing things even if we couldn't see it yet. And so I call it a Rudy clap. It's like half the movies from the 1980s will have this moment. It's in Rudy. It's in Rocky IV, where something happens. It's something cool. It's like the turning point of the movie, but people don't recognize it. They don't realize it, except for one person. And so it's like the janitor at Rudy's college or whatever, and this one person sees what's happening. Ignore the band. And this one person just kind of goes, that just happened. And they're like, Nobody else, stay cool. And so they just like start clapping. And then everybody's kind of like, oh, yeah, yeah. And so like one other person's like, he's right, that is cool. And then somebody else starts clapping, and then pretty soon everybody's clapping. And so we would do that in my living room. Like we would be like, God's gonna do something here. It's not always gonna be four of us for Taco Tuesday. Like, this is gonna be cool someday. God's gonna do things. And here we are 10 years later. And so like I would say, so this is gonna be a slow build if we're gonna do it right, right? So I would say, like, man, no, just me. I would say, this is pretty cool. And then like one other person, somebody elect yourself, would go, this is pretty cool. God has done something really cool. And maybe somebody else would start to go, this is kind of awesome. Like, God has done great things here, and lives have been changed, and we have impacted our city, and we've had impact all over the world. And the coolest thing is that the best is yet to come. God is not done. God is going to do great things here. And so we thank him, and let's